Welcome to the Climate Justice Forum here on KRFP Moscow. We have a great show for you tonight on the Monday, August 26th edition of the Climate Justice Forum, hosted by Wild Idaho Rising Tide and brought to you by a very generous anonymous listener who adopted myself, your program host, Helen Yost, as his KRFP DJ. So tonight, we're going to welcome two regional activists who participated in the Indigenous-led Moccasins on the Ground direct action training camp near Whitehall, Montana, this last weekend, Friday evening through Sunday, August 23rd to 25th. We are mostly honored to hear from Brooklyn Baptiste, who's going to tell the epic story of the four-night Nez Perce blockade on August 5th through the 8th of an Alberta tar sands evaporator on Highway 12 in Idaho, as well as updates about a related federal court injunction hearing. So as we typically do at the beginning of every show, let's start out with a little song, although sometimes they're not songs. They're of much greater import. So what we have here, okay, so it's sort of mainstream media, but it just makes your heart beat faster every time you hear it. The Lewiston Tribune actually recorded about 3 minutes of the initial Nez Perce blockade at the boundary of the reservation right outside the Clearwater River Casino, where they blockaded an Omega Morgan hauled tar sands evaporator heading up to, of course, Alberta to do all kinds of damage to people and places. And I guess the reason why it makes folks so happy is because it's just full of hoops and hollers, and it's when they first stop the load, and it's just that moment of contact. So we're going to play that as a little heart starter here at the beginning of the show, and stay with us for lots of other great stuff here on the Climate Justice Forum. So welcome back to the Climate Justice Forum here on KRFP Moscow. So the name of that, if you would like to look it up on YouTube, is simply Nez Perce Tribe Omega Morgan Blockade. And it was recorded by the Lewiston Tribune on the very first night of four nights worth of blockades and resistance all along Highway 12, which our special guest, Brooklyn Baptiste of the Nez Perce Tribe, and actually of the, I guess I failed to note this, he is on the executive committee of the Nez Perce Tribe. So in other words, the group of nine folks, all men at this point, who make a lot of the decisions in terms of the government processes of the Nez Perce tribe. We're all eager to hear his story about the Nez Perce blockades. And of course, this court case that has been postponed, thankfully, at least from all of our allies' perspective, it's going to be dragging the main proponent of this haul, the company that owns the load, a subsidiary of General Electric, into court, holding their feet to the fire, which is always a good thing, as was done in five different hearings against ConocoPhillips and ExxonMobil to try to keep them from bringing rigs up Highway 12. So, again, we are going to have honored guest Brooklyn Baptiste, who's on the executive committee of the Nez Perce Tribe and who led some of the greatest megalode protests and blockades we've ever seen down on Highway 12 a couple weeks ago between August 5th and 8th. So, Brooklyn, we'd love to hear that whole story of the whole four nights. As well as, of course, you know, the Nez Perce's motivations for that great uprising, and also maybe a little bit about this court case being postponed, because we're very, very fortunate and grateful that the Nez Perce Tribe and Idaho Rivers United is going to be able to confront the actual megalode owner in court here on September 9th. So welcome, Brooklyn, and anything and or everything you want to tell us about all that would be wonderful.
Okay, well, thank you. First, I appreciate you making time for me to speak a little bit on some of the issues and challenges we face, but first, I'll kind of start off with that first protest and the blockade that happened a few weeks back. We got word that the state of Idaho issued a permit for Omega Morgan to unload and start moving up Highway 12, and they conveniently did that, gave a permit, said, and they said, well, we couldn't. They filled the requirements. We could not give them a permit, but they did it strategically. Did it late Friday afternoon when it was too late to file an injunction or do anything, and so on Monday they were set to move. I mean, these guys are methodical in how they work together, and so our chairman Silas Whitman, and he called an emergency meeting in the chambers, called all the NEPTIC in. We had only all but one NEPTIC member who was out rafting in the canyons in the snake. You know, he takes a year, so he wasn't available where he would have been there. So we all met, understood, that we have a huge challenge coming up. We already knew that there were people, our own tribal members, that were ready to protest, and they were upset, and we were thoroughly, caught off guard by the state's actions to give a permit at such a quick notice and then do it on a Friday so they could move on a Monday. They can't move on a weekday, but and they have to do a certain time frame. They have to get it within from the port all the way to the destination or through Idaho. And so we understood that. We took into consideration. We talked about legal avenues that we need to take, but we also knew that our people were going to protest and were most likely going to try something, to do something. And so we all knew it. We had most of our community members, so we decided, it's time for us to step up. We're elected leaders, but we have to be those leaders that transcend those boundaries and help protect it. I think our hugest worry that we had was safety. We needed to provide a safety kind of a factor to it, and even though we're elected, but still people see us as leaders in some sense, and so we knew that we need to be down there and be next to our people, right with them, in front of them. We knew that we would have to go first, even though that we would probably go to jail, but we needed to make a point. We needed to show people that we were not going to allow them to come to our reservation without the proper consultation. And that consultation was the Forest Service talking to the tribe and working with the state of Idaho and Michael Morgan. Judge Windmill had gave the Forest Service the authorization, said you do have the authority to stop them until you guys get the proper review and get those things that you feel are necessary to authorize it or not. And the state of Idaho ignored that and just went through it themselves. So, of course, we were a little bit upset. The Forest Service said they, you know, told us at the time that this was the case, and, you know, they were trying to, they just didn't act in time. So, of course, we decided, well, we're going to go down there and show them, and, you know, of course, we'll stop them. Hopefully, we'll give them, they have to have a certain amount of days to get through, so we'll do what we can. So, at that time, we organized. We started getting the word out the first night, and then we got down there. We had a press meeting, and the first thing was media. You know, this was the first time we've ever protested in that nature. And in that point, I guess last time we did was in Rapid River in the late 70s, early 80s. So we got a hold of the media that we could. I contacted Winona LaDuke, who's a world-renowned activist and long-time advocate for tribal rights, but also just, you know, very smart and very intelligent, but she was empowering. I got a hold of her, and she gave me some media contacts and started, of course, got a hold of your organization. And so we got a lot of people down there. We connected. And we got down there, I think, about 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and just people were, you know, we were nervous, of course. And so, of course, I knew that would most likely happen. We would be going to jail. So right after work, we got done. It was like on a Monday, like, oh, this is really going to happen. And so myself and a few other NEPTIC members that are next First Tribal executive members that were with me, we went into a sweat lodge and we prayed about it. That was one thing, making sure that we were spiritually sound in our foundation as far as what we believed in, what was the right thing, and keep it in a positive note. And so then we went down there and gathered, had the press conference, and then we started getting everyone together, getting people in a safe manner, talking to the membership and all the other advocates that were there as well, all the other activists that were there to support the cause and the anti-megalo going to Highway 12. And so at first, you know, it seems it was, you know, the legal basis is what we were standing on, but there's so many dynamics to it. There's the spiritual and cultural and title land and the pride that we feel as a sovereign that, you know, you have to, you know, can't just go through this whole thing, disrupt our flow and everything else, and come through there without respecting the Nez Perce tribe. You're going through our homeland. There's long-term environmental impacts that we believe need to be studied and reviewed before they even approve this, and that wasn't the case. And so, and the cultural part of it. So it was kind of, it got surreal a little bit, you know, as we got closer, there was kids down there, and I got it, you know, I really felt, I was nervous, of course, and I think otherwise, okay, we just got to make sure we're leaders, we have to show that, you know, be confident. But, you know, what really gave me a good sense of, you know, what I was doing was right was my daughter texted me right before that, and she's 17, and she had texted me on my phone and said, Dad, I don't know what's going to happen later tonight, but just know that I'm very proud of you for doing this, and I love you. And then that in itself, you know, when I got that text, I looked at it, and it teared me up a bit because I knew that what I was doing was going to impact my daughter, my family, you know, those things. But as a father, but as a tribal leader, it meant something. And my daughter was proud of doing that. Later on, she texts me and says, Dad, I'm down here, and can I join you? I said, sure. So she actually sat down after we got her taken away. But all that, we led up to it. And then I think they didn't get there till about, geez, close to 12:30 to 1 is when the megalodes actually start rounding the corner, that big evaporator, and actually took out a guardrail when it was coming down. And that's when they should have stopped it, you know, because of what it was doing. But everything just was set upon, you know, this, we're fighting a large, limitless, resource-rich company. You know, they have billions of dollars, and so they've, in my opinion, greased the wheels so much with the state of Idaho with everyone else. And so they were just nothing was going to stopped them. So we had close to, I'd say, 100, 150 people, more than I ever expected. But the energy, we had tribal elders, you know, youth there, they all wanted to be part of it. But our job was to keep them safe. So when they rounded the corner and they had the cops or the state police, the counties were parked in the median already. They knew what was going to happen. We knew what was going to happen. Our tribal police were there. But we wanted to do it in a manner we still exercised our sovereignty. And so our tribal police actually were parked right there ready for it, but we stayed on the reservation line for jurisdictional issues, too. We didn't want to put in anyone else's jurisdiction. So when that came around, we all, I mean, everyone got out into Highway 12 safely. They blocked the, you know, put lights up on other sides so people knew, hey, the traffic coming the other way would slow down because it was so many people out there. So we put the blockades, walked out there, stood there, and that's when it began. And then as soon as we went out there, the lights clicked on, and it was just surreal to see everything happening. Everyone behind us, even the drum group, Lightning Creek, one of our younger drum groups from our tribe here, got out there, and they were singing, a song that we hail as our national anthem. It was a song sung by our people back in 1855, a treaty signing in Walla Walla, so it's very historical. So there was a lot of pride and spiritual energy there that we felt, and it just felt really good. And then there came to the time where, you know, we stalled them, and after a while, you know, they gave us a certain amount of time, and then our own tribal police came up, and it was funny because there's a picture that circulated that of my cousin. He is a tribal police, but you know, he still has to do his job, and we told him, you still have to do your job, your integrity. You have to do your job regardless of whether, if it's counsel or not. And he's the one that actually arrested me, and that's kind of the picture that went viral. I had put it on my Facebook because some of my own people didn't understand the exercise of sovereignty that we're doing, that our own tribal cops, the tribal police arrest us rather than state or county, certain their jurisdiction. And so they took us to county, and we were all sitting in there one by one. We all got filtered into one cell, and we were all kind of sitting in one cell. And it was crazy just because of the commotion, but seeing all the people, seeing them come together, all the hardships, all the things that we go through as a community, as a tribe, was all set aside for a common cause, and that was to take pride in who we were as a people and what we were doing, and that we're standing for our rights together against a large oil company who just felt that they could take it for granted, they could talk to everyone and put money into everything. Not that we have a price, but they thought that little of the Nez Perce tribe that they were going through our territory. So it was great, and we didn't realize how big of an impact it would be till later, that when we got out and things kind of hit in Indian country, and a lot of the media just went viral real fast, and it was crazy because all of us finally bonded out about 4 a.m. And so we had to be at work the next day to run our committees as a council, and I was running the natural resource, and all of us were just extremely tired, sitting there looking at each other, trying to run the meetings. And so that was the first night. And then the next night, we stalled them long enough, they only made it three more miles down the road. And then the next night, everyone showed up again. And so as people joined and as it evolved, the next night was in Orfino, then the next night was up at, followed up higher up by Fish Creek up to Loxaw. And that every night someone showed up, you know, they had I think there was one news, female from KLEW, Sophia, and then there was another person from a local paper, I think up in Moscow. But, you know, it progressed every night, you know, and it got a little bit tougher in the state, and then they didn't. I was a little worried with how aggressive the state police got with some of the people. I could see that they were a little bit over-aggressive and zealous, and, you know, we even as council tried to approach them all before the Tuesday, third night of protesting, tried to talk to them, said, we understand you have to do your job, but please don't, you know, rough our people up, you know. And then I was a little disappointed to state police. They didn't seem like they wanted to listen to us. Kind of walked off in their own group, and we spoke with the county, and they were really good, and our tribal police. And then later that night, I was watching it, and I could definitely see there was some animosity from the state police that they showed in their actions, trying to almost antagonize a bit, you know. And our job was just to keep them safe as leaders, show up, and then try to keep people safe. And so it progressed into that until that last night up in Fish Creek, up in the Locksaw, you know, and that was tough because communication was a factor. People were trying to communicate with each other, and they just couldn't find it along that road at nighttime. So they finally got together, and they protested, and the Megalo did make it through, and then on to Montana, where some of the protesters on the other side, because of our protest that first night and the notoriety it got, or, you know, they really empowered some of them. Later, I found out that because we did that as a tribe, it empowered a lot of people to get up and do the same thing that sometimes they didn't think of it, didn't think they would. So it was great to see that. And so now after that, we bought enough time to file an injunction with Idaho Rivers United on the fact that the Forest Service should act. They got the authority they need to. And so right now that was set for tomorrow, actually, but it got moved back because Omega Morgan wants to be involved, so it gives us a little bit more time, and also that they actually have to answer to some of the other questions which we would want in the end. So we bought a little more time, and kind of that's where we're at. I think September 9th is the next hearing date set.
So I'm sort of curious because I've seen two different accounts of whether it's Omega Morgan, the hauler, or the company, I guess, General Electric subsidiary, that's actually going to be trying to join the court case, and also has said that they won't run any megaloads until September 18th, which is long after the court hearing. So yeah, I'm curious about some of those discrepancies that I've seen from different sources today.
Yeah, and I believe the initial contact information was in Omega Morgan, but other than that, I'm not quite sure. And that's, I think, what will be fleshed up between now and September 9th, that next hearing date. And so we're kind of waiting to see who else, you know, is the same thing. Because of the nature of the litigation, you kind of got information is really kind of not fleshed out completely. So I think that's what we're waiting for. But I got the same information that you did and so we did as a tribe, so we're still working towards that. But we know we have some time until the 18th at least. And there'll be no loads till then.
And so that, of course, gives activists across the region a little chance to put their heads together in terms of training. And although it might not be necessary, the best case scenario, of course, is that the courts will find some good, civilized, dignified resolution amongst all the parties. And of course, our hope is, as yours is, that the megalodes never again go up Highway 12. But, you know, I guess Moccasins on the Ground was a great opportunity for people to get together and talk about various issues surrounding tar sands development, not just the looming possibility of both the State Department and President Obama permitting the Keystone XL pipeline to go through eastern Montana, but of course, you know, more megalodes coming through various routes throughout Idaho and Montana, and both indigenous and climate activists wanting to stand up against this other incoming rather than an outgoing tar sands invasion. So could you tell us a little bit about what happened this last weekend?
Okay, yeah, real quick, you know, I was invited by Winona LaDuke to come over to Missoula. She said she, because I had asked her for some media contacts, knew she was very savvy and had a lot of pull. She's been in the game for quite some time, and I really respect her very much. Never really got to meet her. She did come to the tribe a couple years ago about this issue, and at that time we succeeded in the state of Montana by filing amicus, and, you know, that one got stuck there, and we stopped, you know, 100 and some loads, cost them billions of dollars. So she invited me to come over to speak at a fundraiser for the Moccasins on the Ground, and, you know, and I had gone over there, and I wasn't sure if I was going to continue on to Moccasins on the Ground. I thought about it, and so I went over there, and I met Winona and spoke at this fundraiser, and then the next day there's like, well, we're going to Butte, and I said, well, it's only, you know, a little over 100 miles to Butte, so let's go, you know. So I picked her up, and Elaine Buffalo Spirit, who was an artist, who donated some of her work to help with the fundraising, and so we decided, let's go. So Elway Potts, she came over, and she spoke after me on the issue, and she said, really like you to come over there, you know, and so, all right. So I decided to keep on going. So the next day I picked up Winona and Elaine, and we headed for Butte, actually Whitehall, which is on the other side of the hill there from Butte, and then about 15 miles south of there. And so we made it there. We got to the camp, and it was just first thing, you just felt the energy, and it was one of those places that had security there because it was serious business, and they were there. It was about trying to develop and teach nonviolent direct action, and there were people that showed up when we all start meeting each other. They're very gracious. Of course, everyone knew who Winona was, and then after they realized, you know, this person, you're the one that got arrested, you know, they really respected that, because what we had done was, by elected leadership, tribal elected leadership, we empowered and inspired a lot of people out there, figured this is what the tribal leaders can do besides, you know, so they got that point of view, we sit behind a desk. So we showed up, and they were really gracious to us, and I got to meet some longtime activists, hardcore, you know, just great people that were have been in it, you know, from the Oglala Nation, and one of them was Deborah Whiteplume, and she was just, you know, she was very gracious, and El Rey met us, and we started meeting other people there. We got there, we did an introduction that evening, Friday evening, and just there was people from West Virginia, there was people from New York, all over Mississippi, San Francisco. There, people had just come from being arrested down in Utah with the developing tar sands down there, and so there was a common theme, and it was all about making sure that people were safe, and what you did was nonviolent, and techniques on how to get your point across, and things that I just digested, like things that we saw. You know, us never doing that before. Everything they show, this is what you got to be careful, you know, when you're trying to develop those things. And make a cause, try to develop strategies on your goals. And there were so many people that showed up. It was just great. They had TP set up on the property owner. He said, you know, he felt real committed on helping people and was graciously hosted. They had 4 TP set up, people camping. Everyone ate and took care of each other, you know, community dinners. They sang some sacred songs with the drum and spoke, and Winona spoke, I think, Saturday morning, and then we had a couple of sessions and then lunch, and they asked me to be the keynote speaker for that afternoon. So that was real tough. I think it made me nervous as a young man following up Winona. You know, she's world renowned for her activism, and so it was great. But the strategies and everything that they did, I think El Rey did a great job organizing. Everyone who came together to help did a great job teaching and showing people how to organize and do it in a safe manner and get your point across, but especially be organized in how you do things. But also was a great opportunity to network with other people from across the country and realize there was a common theme there, and that was people waking up and trying to be active and doing something rather than watching or sitting in the silence, but actually getting into it, understanding that there's a huge assault on our, not only on our human rights, but our environment as well. And there's a lot of things, whether it's coal transportation to the ports on Seattle. So it was great. I just think it was a great opportunity, and the energy was great, and I'm hoping there will be more, and they, you know, people are ready to get out there and start helping each other. These people accrued 14 hours just to come from West Virginia to get there to help people, and I thought it was great.
All right. Well, thank you for that description of Moxons on the Ground. And, of course, we have been talking with Brooklyn Baptiste, who is a member of the Nez Perce Executive Committee and one of the folks that led protests over the week of August 5th through 8th. And we just really want to thank you for joining us. And we're looking forward to some great collaboration in the future if direct action does become necessary on Highway 12. And hope that you will join us again on this program, Brooklyn. So thank you very much.
Very much. You take care and have a good night. We look forward to working with you. We appreciate all your advocacy.
All right. Thank you, Brooklyn. So we're going to take a quick break here. So stay with us here on the Climate Justice Forum.